the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. My name is Matthew Darlitz, Editor-in-Chief of the Science of Psychotherapy, and I'm here with our Managing Editor, as always, the wonderful Richard Hill. Howdy, Richard.
Oh, look, I'm feeling wonderful now. Hi, Matt. Great to talk to you again. How are you going?
Oh, yes, you know, surviving. I'm still here. I keep turning up.
That's me too. Me too. And all our lovely listeners out there. Thank you so much, everybody, for keep coming back to our podcast. It's really great. And there's a bunch of you out there. A few thousand come in every week. It's really terrific.
Yes. Yes, it is. We have quite a few thousand people tune in every week, and that's really precious to us. So, Richard, today we're going over to South Carolina to talk to a friend of yours.
Yes, a great colleague, but great friend of mine. He's in Aiken, I think it is pronounced, in South Carolina, although, you know, he's got this beautiful, southern drawl. But Paul Leslie, he's been someone that I've got to know quite regularly because we're both regular speakers at the Erickson Foundation conferences. So I just got to know Paul. I think I did a podcast, his podcast, a year or so ago. But he's a really interesting a guy, and you've got some of his books there. What you've got?
I do, yeah. So I've got a book list here, and some really interesting titles here. Get Out of Your Seat: An Average Passenger's Guide to Overcoming Airline Terror. Shadows in the Season: Low Country Shamanism. The Year of Living Magically: Practical Ways to Create a Life of Spirit, Wonder, and Connection. But what we're most interested in today, and we'll touch on a little bit, is one of his more recent books, The Art of Creating a Magical Session.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually a great book. This sort of work that he's doing as he expands out into these areas of, you know, say shamanism and being in the South, he goes there. But what he's touching in on, and I'm sure he'll talk about some of this stuff and it'll come out. He's touching in is what's going on with the human experience. And Scott Miller, a great friend of ours as well, who is looking at, you know, is therapy that much different from that intuitive, engaged experience that we've seen in some of the shamans and other sort of healing people? It's really interesting to think about. We've got to think about this stuff and start not just see what we accept and what we don't accept. And Paul is a really great one because amongst all this stuff that he's thinking, he produces wonderful results in his therapy.
Yeah. Okay, so looking forward to jumping across and having a chat to him. But before we do, I just want to encourage you, if you enjoy what we're doing here, what we're presenting on the Science of Psychotherapy, please support us by becoming a subscriber. You can become a subscriber for as little as $10 a month for our standard subscription. Or if you want a magazine-only subscription, $50 a year. It's not a lot, and it would really support us, and we'd appreciate you being part of the tribe.
And we've got all this valuable, amazing stuff. If you want to check it out, come to thescienceofpsychotherapy.net. That's the place to come.
Okay, fantastic. All right, Richard, let's go across to South Carolina.
Fantastic. Come on, Paul.
Paul Leslie, welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. How are you?
I'm delighted to be talking to both you nice gentlemen today. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thanks for including me. Here I am. Great to see you, Paul. It almost seems like too long, but actually when I think about it, it's only been a couple of months.
Time passes. Time is relative, as Einstein said, but it does seem to pass quicker the older we all get for some reason.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, it's great to see you. So everybody, Paul and I have been connecting for quite a number of years at the Milton Erickson Foundation conferences. And so he's just become a great mate, but that's not why he's on the show. He's on the show because he's also quite brilliant. Now we'll have his wonderful book here, The Art of Creating a Magical Session. He's done fantastic writings, and we've talked about that in our little preview on all kinds of interesting things down there. A man who lives in South Carolina has just got to be a little hoodoo voodoo, and he is. But all this, and I don't want to go on because I want you to go on because I love the term key elements for transformative psychotherapy. And you've been having a lot to say, along with a lot of us, including me and Matt, about where psychotherapy is going. And as you know, Erickson, you know, effectiveness of psychotherapy, Scott Miller, also a good friend of ours. So can I just sort of go, there's your trigger and your stimulus, Paul, go. just talk to us about the sorts of things that have been going through. You've been doing making a bit of a splash about this lately. That's why we wanted to have you on. We wanted to share this this conversation with you.
Well, I think we're all kind of headed in the direct the right direction as many of our peers. I think everyone wants to, if you're going to be a therapist or a coach or any type of healing profession, you want to be effective. But for me, I've kind of looked at this term effective, and I said there's got to be more than just being effective. There's got to be more than just meeting goals. And I kind of thinking of this, how do people transform? And I feel like when we do psychotherapy that is transformative, it's not just that we've solved or helped someone solve their problem or we've met the treatment goals, which are essential, absolutely essential for good therapy, but we've kind of taken the person and perhaps ourselves to places that we hadn't gone previously and that we can never quite fit the same into that same situation, view it the same way, do it the same way, maybe even understood. I hate to use that term understood because it's a lot of people take that as a cognitive thing, but that could be also a somatic understanding that we're just not the same person we were at the end of a transformative session or a transformative series of sessions. So that kind of led me to examine what are these elements that create this cocktail of transformative psychotherapy. And as many people have already stated, and the research has shown, all the major theories and the major techniques usually are equally effective when we, you know, control for all those variables. So it had to be more than just that, although that is still an important ingredient. And I found things like we were taught in graduate school about having empathy and having connection with the client. But unfortunately, that's something that you don't see too many trainings on that. It's kind of like you're expected to do it, but it's rare that too many people actually teach you how to do that or how to utilize feedback in the moment from clients to take them out of problem context. So it's been a bit of a journey that I guess we're all still on. I know I'm on. I'm learning new things every day that it's really about creating an experience. If you had to get to it in a sentence, it's about creating an experience that feels transformative, that feels what I've used the term magical, I think psychologist Bruce Hood refers to as having a super sense that there's something different in the way I feel somatically as well as cognitively about something. And I think that's where, you know, one of my primary influences, Milton Erickson. I mean, his whole work was built on a lot of these, creating these kind of experiences, him and many others. So that's kind of what I've been focusing on in my research and in my therapy work lately.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm sorry, Matt, you go.
I was just going to say, Paul, when you're mentioning empathy and, you know, the lack of training, and another thing that comes to mind is intuition. Is it because these are difficult things to train people in an academic setting? Like, it's not as straightforward as, the cognitive tasks of doing A, B, and C. This is much more a personal in deep dive into the self.
Yeah, there's a couple of books out on you brought up intuition that I think are very good. Trying to think of one in particular, but it'll come to me. And they're excellent, and they encourage that. And they give the actual neurobiology of where we think this comes from. But at the end of all the books, what we mostly get is, okay, I think I understand how this works, but just having the confidence and freedom to just say something that I feel is important intuitively, even if it might not make sense. But what has given me more confidence is studying things like improvisational theater and comedy and things like that, to where things just open up, which lead to other things. And if we're trying to, the way I do therapy is, my focus is always on moving people out of problem contexts and problem frames that they find themselves in. So the only way that I feel I can really get someone out of shift the context or something, is I will have to sometimes just say something or do something that might not make sense at the moment. But that's where I have to have that intuitive knowing of my own that, you know, this is going to lead somewhere. An example, the other day is I had a young man who was telling me all about some of the problems he was having with his girlfriend. And I just noticed that the way he did his hair was just so totally unique. It reminded me of, I'm dating myself here, but Morrissey, the singer Morrissey for the band The Smiths. And I was like, I just thought about one, I can't even remember what the song title was. And I just said the song title. And the guy says, yeah, that's kind of where, yeah, oh my God, that's exactly, I can't remember what it was. I wish I had, I could write it down, but it was just one thing led to another, which opened another avenue for us to talk about. But it is difficult to, and I'm still trying to figure out, how do you teach this? But I don't know if it's so much we teach, I think we all do it. It's more just learning to trust ourselves to allow those things to happen. My friend Betty Friedson, who's a social worker and a therapist, and is actually writing a book on clinical intuition, is just, the whole thing comes down to being able to trust that inner knowing to just go with what happens. And that's kind of scary, though, for many of us, you know?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I've been talking about this for a long time, as you know. I mean, I open up in my book with Ernie, just sort of saying that a client comes in and says, I'm not okay. Then you do some stuff and they say, I'm okay now. And everyone goes, hooray. And I always ask the question, how do they know? How do we know we're okay? And the trust that I think that we can do quite safely is trust that there is a preference in amongst our systems to move towards something that makes us better. And then you the logic of that is that is, of course, how species survives. And just one last comment, I'd love you to add to it, because it was a beautiful statement in Joseph Ledoux's book on his little look into the 4 billion years of how humans created consciousness. But it just gave this really fundamental principle that a set of elements that are more cooperative will tend to gather together and produce a functional whole. And those things that are more in conflict will tend to break up and not form a functional whole. And he said, that's actually just a rule for everything. And I think this is so much of what I see in your work. What can we prod, poke, put in, throw around, in order to find that mechanism that shifts us into more cooperation, gives us more something that enables that? Does that make any sort of sense?
Well, absolutely, and I think it's a way, the holes, and it's a different way to see therapy, which the way it's usually taught is it's a very linear process. And I think by viewing therapy as a strict cause and effect linear process, we miss out on the ability to create new openings. Because let's be honest, if we stick to a strict Darwinian view of evolution, so much of evolutionary changes happens due to random. I mean, something random gets introduced. Well, why would therapy be any different? And if we're going to say the same things we always say, or we get my favorite, the yes buts from the client, you know, yes, I know that I need to work on my irrational thoughts, but I still feel this way, which is a legitimate thing for a client to say if it isn't working, not that they're being resistant, they're just being honest. I think that we might need to introduce this something random, something unexpected. You know, if we do that from an ethical place, it can open up dialogue, it can open up action, and most importantly, it'll open up interaction. My biggest beef, I think, with so much of what passes as psychotherapy is that we are focused on explanatory models instead of interactional models. Mm-hmm. And I think it's nice to have an understanding to explain why things are happening. And sometimes our clients really benefit from that. But I think we've just lost steam in the last, I don't know, 20 years or more back. I'm going way back to, you know, the systemic therapist where it was about interaction a lot more. But it seems like a lot of that, at least in the United States, we've lost a lot of that understanding or way to approach things. But if it's interaction based, then introducing random elements is almost essential. You know, I remember reading a case of Dr. Milton Erickson where he had a guy who was getting nowhere with who was incredibly depressed. So Erickson said, well, if you're going to be depressed at home, that's fine. Just be depressed. But you have to go to the library for the next 2 weeks from, you know, 10 to 4 and just sit there and be depressed. Take a lunch, go sit there and be depressed because, I mean, you're going to be depressed at home. And in doing that, he would go to the library, read magazines, and he would strike up conversations with people, end up making a friend, you know, found out, oh, there's an interesting magazine on spelunking. I've never done that. Maybe I should do that. And so just by doing something totally random, which is interrupting a pattern, you know, Erickson was able to get a little lead into breaking that up. And I have the feeling that when the guy started doing all these things, it made Erickson's work that much easier. Because he wasn't still continue to get stuck in that same context.
So, Paul, as you're talking about this, I'm wondering, do we need permission to be creative? Because what you're talking about is being creative beyond established methodologies that we use. And I'm thinking, do we need permission to step out like this?
Well, I think that's a great question. However, my first question is permission from whom specifically?
Exactly. Well, that's a follow-on question. Who is going to give us the permission?
Right, right. Yeah. If we keep looking to an outside authority, and again, I'm not talking about the realm of ethics and laws, but if we keep looking for an outside authority, we minimize our ability to, you know, create change in our therapy room. It's one thing to seek supervision when you get stuck, and I highly recommend that, and I do that, you know, as well. But I think sometimes when we second-guess ourselves and we just need somebody to tell us, you know what, just go for it. And, you know, if it doesn't work, just apologize or say, well, it didn't work, and moved on. And I'm going to swipe one of Richard's stories that I love that he tells every now and then is about he worked with a lady one time who he was trying to work with her. And at one point she says, do you even know what you're doing? And Richard, I think he said something like, no, not really, but let's just see where this goes. And to me, that's the attitude you have to have. It's like, you know, and can you ever really know? Because you can't know what you don't know, and you don't know what the next moment's going to bring. Because that wonderful insight that you might have had, 45 minutes earlier with the last client, you try to have it with this one, and they look at you like you're, you know, stupid, or they just can't understand you, or they want to argue with you. So it's a great point. Is then if we need permission, it's just that we got to give it to ourselves and say it's okay. It's really okay to make mistakes. And then say the wrong thing. And, you know, as long as we aren't intentionally trying to harm someone, but it's a weird thing. I don't know if medical doctors seem to fret as much about when they're doing surgery as we do doing therapy. Because, you know, we have this idea that, you know, it's like, you're going to irrevocably screw up this individual. Well, you know, it's not like I'm doing, you know, brain surgery. I mean, can you imagine a surgeon just sitting there with so much self-doubt and he's working in your brain? But somehow our profession, it's just rampant for some reason.
Well, I think, you know, because I've worked for 10 years as a paramedic. And so in that world, you very much do follow protocol to the T. So, you know, you're going to a pediatric arrest. You have very strict protocols and you follow it through. So there is no second guessing unless you forget your protocol. but there is there's no scope for creativity. You know, if we're not, you know, traveling to an arrest and we're going to say, well, you know, let's just be creative with this one, you know, and just see what happens. You know, there's definite protocols. So there's a security in that. And you definitely know if you are on the ball or not in that world. But with psychotherapy, because it is very nonlinear and complex, it's a very different world.
Yeah. And yet at the same time, it's more and more people want to treat it as if it's the paramedic world or the medical world that is
right.
You know, protocols. And the doctor who doubts himself is going to have, you know, if he's not following the protocol, or even when he is following the protocol, if he's still doubting himself, I'm sure that's going to hamper his ability. But you get into a field where it isn't a point A to point B to point C, which unfortunately too many people seem to crave. I think that it does heighten our anxiety, but then that's where we have to be okay with just, I think, being open to what comes. So much of a magical session is unexpected. When you go to a magic show, you want to be amazed. Well, I didn't see that coming. I mean, that's why I love like some of the magicians who watch the other magicians and they know how the trick is done, but the way they do it, they get amazed. Oh, I know how you saw the lady in half, but the way you did it, that blew me away. And yeah, I think it's the same thing with therapy. Even if we do know, oh, well, okay, Paul's really spotting this irrational belief. Okay, then we're going to do some mindfulness. Okay, you know, we're all doing that stuff somewhat, but how we're doing it in that moment where that spontaneity happens, I think it really separates who's got it and who doesn't. I don't want to sound elitist, but unfortunately there are some people who just don't have it. I don't think it's because they're not creative, but maybe it's because they're not trusting themselves
I think that goes to the permission thing. And as you know, and people know, I started out my training in psychotherapy in the acting profession. Excellent. But of course, improvisation was a big part of the work we did, and we would do things. And I got the simplest and most clarifying advice when we were in a class and early stages of acting school and improvisation, saying, oh, this is really difficult. What do we do? How do we do this and do that? And the teacher just turned to us and said, oh, for God's sake, your whole life is an improvisation. You have no idea what you're going to do in the next minute, what's going to happen, how you're going to respond. And she said, you're all already brilliant at improvising. And of course, my feeling is that because of exactly as you say, what's been happening over the last 20 years, the hyper manualization or the hyper organization of therapies, that we've actually, it's not so much people don't know how to improvise, they've been told they're, and it's what I think about what you said, Matt, they've actually been told, no, you don't have permission. You have to follow somebody else's wisdom. That's tricky. That's tricky.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, someone else's wisdom. I think that was an excellent quote. And I think we can all value and learn from someone's wisdom. I mean, if my grandparents were still alive, I would love to talk to them, to the wisdom they've had of just daily life, you know. But at the same time, there's some things that I'm going to have to deal with that maybe they didn't deal with, or maybe that they dealt with it in a different way. And same with my parents. But somehow when we get the therapy gods, who many of them who have long departed, it's almost like things are so entrenched and you can't, you feel if you vary from what you've been taught in some cases, that maybe you're committing, you know, one of the thou shalt not, commandments. And I really feel most people down deep who are good therapists know that there's a time to, you got to do something a little different. If you are creating an experience for the client, though, it can't be just in the realm of what's happened before. It can't be in the realm of what could happen in the future. It has to be in the improvisational moment to moment. So even if you are a master of one theory and one one type of technique, how you apply that in this dynamic moment of interaction, are you stimulating, we go neurobiological, are you stimulating that the emotional parts of the brain to create a shift in the way the person feels or even just processes what's going on in the moment in a positive direction? Well, you know, that requires us to just say we have to responsibly throw caution to the wind. I think it was Heinz von Forrester said that you have to act in order to know.
Yeah.
And we keep waiting to know in order to act, and that's what's kind of limiting sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just thinking too of the huge scope of things that we experience that create transformative change, not just different psychotherapy techniques, but in the greater, you know, going on a trip somewhere, going to a motivational speaker, you know, one of these big hyped sort of events can create a transformational change.
Because I'm thinking of a couple of different things. I know there was someone who half jokingly said, I'm only half joking, is that a really good therapist, just be a bad travel agent. And send people out with bad travel plans, and they sure learn to cope for themselves. But this, but nature therapy, yeah, Paul, you know, sort of taking kids out, particularly it's done with kids, but taking people out into the natural environment and saying, well, you're no longer dealing with, you know, this social issue or that social issue. You're actually dealing with whether nature's going to rain on you or, you know, do those sort of various things. This getting back, this trying to find, and I just keep coming back to this word experience that keeps rolling around, rather than process. Although in an experience is a process, but is this something that you find that you're able to create in your rooms? And do you have a couple more sort of stories that pop to mind about this emergent experience that even surprised you?
Certainly, my goal is always when I sit with anyone, and they're telling me whatever the problem is or their hardships, I've just had to train myself over the years that I'm always looking for resources, positive resources that they can utilize to kind of assist themselves. As I'm sure you guys have talked about multiple times, that, you know, all client healing is really self-healing. We're just the catalysts to create that self-healing in them. So if I'm not taking responsibility for their healing, but at the same time taking responsibility for my action and what I can point out or get them to do that may be the catalyst, we can then co-create an experience. I think too much of therapy has been a therapist does this or theory technique does this to client, whereas this co-creative moment-to-moment process or experience is what happens. Whatever I'm saying is going to come back to me by some reaction, and then I utilize whatever's coming back to me to hopefully move people out of more problem context. I think everybody has something that they can utilize to make whatever they're going through better. I have a real quick checklist in my head that I keep. I call it the vibes model, which is values, identity, behaviors, environment, spirituality. And so anytime I'm talking to people, I'm kind of rolling around, you know, what's that person's highest value that's not being acknowledged, or how can that be used? I worked with a lady one time who her highest value was being a grandmother. And I don't even remember what the situation was, but she was a good bit older than me. So somehow as we went through, I kind of said, let me ask you some grandmotherly advice. And I just tried to treat as if she was the wisdom keeper, the grandmother thing. And it seemed to activate some things inside her and how we were interacting over the sessions, several sessions we had, that she ended up having a little more confidence in whatever she was dealing, because that was a high value of her. And whatever this problem was tended to kind of, I guess, help her forget, unfortunately, that was a resource she had, being a grandmother, being a wisdom keeper. Identity is what who we think we are. I had a gentleman whose wife, unfortunately, had died several months before, and he had just lost everything trying to take care of her and care for her. But his highest identity for himself was he was a businessman. He was in the construction business. And so I said, well, the first thing we need to do is to get you back into business. We can deal with this grief. I mean, it's going to be there. But by reuniting him with the identity of being the businessman instead of the limited grieving husband, it just opened up some resources that he'd forgotten. What the behaviors people do. What are some things you did before the problem? What are some things that you wouldn't expect to do? You know, I mentioned environment. You said going out in the nature, and that's great. Going on vacations. planting a garden, all those kind of things, painting all the rooms in your bedroom, all the walls in your bedroom, rather, a real weird color for just a week or two. That's changing the environment, you know. And then spirituality, obviously, for a lot of people, the faith, religion, meditation, whatever it is, if those are resources, you'll find that most of the time when they're in hardship, they've kind of become disconnected from those. So for me, creating an experience as to whatever the resource is when I hear is trying to whatever I can do to move them toward whatever that resource is, because that's what's going to help change the brain a little bit. That's what's going to click in and have the person feel a little stronger, a little more in control, rather than excessive rehashing of the psychological archaeology, if you will.
Yeah. Wonderful.
I love that vibes. That's great. And, you know, these lovely, unique expressions and forms and things that each of us create that give us our own scaffolding. And probably if we put all these together, we've got, you know, 10 of us all together and said, this is sort of the acronym that I use, we'd probably find they're all very similar. Because what you've said there, the vibes thing, is beautiful. On one sense, it's motherhood and apple pie on the other. But it's a beautiful framework that works, and I know you, so I know why you vibe with vibe. So I'm really taken by that, and I'm going to press you for an article because that's great.
Yeah, fantastic.
Is there any parting sort of comment that you would like to leave us with, Paul? Or is that a lovely place to finish? Where are you at?
I would just tell anyone listening who's a therapist, just trust yourself. If you trust yourself, your therapy will go so much more magically than you think it ever could.
That's beautiful. So I'd just like to remind people out there that this book is The Art of Creating a Magical Session, and we will leave a link in the show notes.
And for some of the other books as well. There's a few of them, Matt.
There's a stack of books here I've got in front of me, yes.
Yeah. So we'll bring them all in on the show notes, and we'll direct them to your website and all those things, Paul. But for now, we just have to say thanks for a magical session.
Well, thank you. You've co-created it with me, and I appreciate that very much.
That's beautiful. All right.
Appreciate you.
Well, another fantastic conversation. It's great to talk to Paul. He's got insights and understanding way above how well he's recognized, and I'm keen for Paul to be known better and heard more. Mm. And there are a lot of other people who also are very keen on his stuff. And so that was great. And I think, we need to talk more. I love your point, Matt, about what have we got permission to do? We have to think about that, put it together, because there's permissions we give ourselves, permissions our profession gives us. Permissions that the clients, what do they have? There's a lot of these things which are restricting us. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, it is quite a web, and some of it is not necessarily restricting, and some of it is good guidelines, I think.
What's the balance?
Yeah exactly. So I'd love to get Paul back and have a chat about some of these things.
I can think of a few people that could really contribute. Let's see what we could do, but that's a little bit of a an aspiration at the moment. But meanwhile, thanks to Paul, and thanks to me, and thanks to Matt, and thanks to the audience, and we're done.
Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning into the Science of Psychotherapy podcast, and Richard and I will catch you next week. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.